Is that all right?
Mm.
Yeah. I think it was when we were in the Ardennes, I can't remember exactly when. He'd just been awarded of what we call a Red Star Immediate DSO. Now, you can win a DSO, and a better DSO is when it's an immediate award. A Red Star is one that's given within 24 hours of the action. And he'd been given, part because of our Dorset Woods battle, he'd been given a Red Star Immediate DSO. It's relevant to the next point. We were then doing this battle down, to, in our case, down to capture Gok. To capture Gok. And we were doing a night attack. And the battalion, the forward companies were saying, wait a minute, we come to a crossroads, there's some enemy on the crossroads. But wait a minute, they're not the enemy, they're the 7th Hampshires. They'd crossed off their proper main axis of advance and had crossed onto our axis. And we were being instructed to attack that crossroads regardless of whether it's our own troops, because we had to cross it. And they didn't realise it was us. So that caused a bit of delay. There was even further delay. So we were quite worried about this. How do we attack our own troops? Meanwhile, we were in a night formation, so we were exposed. Daylight was beginning to come. And there we were in a daylight by this time, a daylight formation, an inappropriate formation for this, to advance any further. So the CO decided to delay it and set up a new plan for a daylight attack. I was on, I told you about the radio, I was on the rear link, what we call the rear link to brigade, and suddenly on the set, and sort of I'm using the code words that they would be used in handling radio communications, and your commanding officer was always known as Sunray. So I got Sunray to set. That was my CO. He wasn't near me. I had to get hold of him. I said, you're needed, Colonel, you know. And I said on the radio, who wants him? So they said, Big Sunray. Now, Big Sunray wouldn't have been the brigade commander. It must have been the divisional commander who wanted to speak to him. Anyway, I put the CO on. And I heard him say something, not terribly clear. And he suddenly took his headset off to me. Jack, I've been sacked. The division commander sacked him because he wasn't advancing fast enough. He just got a Red Star Immediate DSO.
Yes.
He removed. On the air. Just like that. It's unbelievable. But so the 2nd in command had to take over, who happened to be at Dorset. And Bill Ranner went back. He appealed, actually. He got command of another battalion but by Monty. But it was an extraordinary thing.
And who was the general who sacked him?
It was G.I. Thomas.
It was Thomas, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was Thomas. Because he wasn't moving fast enough, regardless of the 7th Hampshire on his front, and we hadn't moved fast enough. Checked him on the ear.
Yes.
And I've told this story to other people. I'm amazed that anybody could be sacked in such a way in 10 seconds, literally. Right in the middle of battle.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that, we eventually achieved our objectives, and that brought us to the time when we were stayed in a rest area while we prepared for the Battle of the Rhine. That was major planning. We rested for probably a couple of weeks because we crossed the Rhine, I think, on the 24th of March. And again, we didn't do the assault ourselves of the Rhine itself. That was done by the 51st Highland Division, but we were immediately behind them. So I suppose they crossed that night, and we crossed the following morning.
So can I ask, when you have your 2 weeks in rest, you're receiving replacements. Are these trained replacements from other units that have been broken up, or
Or well, there might have been casualties that had come back,
yes,
gone away and come back, and that. Again, I mean, There were a lot of people transferring from being trained as infantrymen back in England normally, from the Royal Artillery.
Yes.
Some of them came mainly from the Royal Artillery, actually.
But the manpower problem.
Particularly ACAC, not needed because of the German Air Force had been decimated.
The manpower problem must have been quite a serious problem.
It was a serious problem. I mean, if it had been another couple of years of war, I'm not certain we could have sustained it.
Yes. Yes. So, we come all
those, fronts, or one of the fronts would have had to have gone, the Italian front would have fallen, and that would have given us manpower.
So we come really to your final, or perhaps not final, you're going to tell me, but we come to the last major operation of the war, which is the crossing of the Rhine.
Yeah.
And you did
well,
so.
Well, continuing from there,
yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, go on.
I was going to ask, you went over the Rhine immediately behind the 51st Highland Division?
Yes.
And the Germans were really in retreat, or were you in contact with the enemy?
We were in contact all the time, really.
Really?
But not in any great numbers. They were fighting a lot of rearguard actions. A lot of their major formations had been damaged, and they'd been written down to like a lot of small battle groups, as they used to call it, as they created. So you'd be up against these battle groups, some of them quite determined. But it would only require a few guns and a few machine guns on a particular vital crossroads or something to delay things quite a lot. First of all, to enable you, while you assess, you know, what the strength of the opposition is before you can actually take it on. I mean, you can't actually go mad and just regardless.
Go charging in.
Charge ahead.
Yes.
That would be crazy. But on the other hand, once you've taken a place, you suddenly realise there weren't many there, that they would be pretty determined.
Did you use artillery to dislodge them?
Yes. We use it. I mean, the great successes of the war was the way we were able to cooperate very closely between the coordination between infantry and artillery. I've often said that I think the armour, the service that made the greatest contribution to the winning of the war was the Royal Artillery. And because we were able to bring in massive, well, not by the standards of Iraq and all the American stuff, but in those days, vast numbers amount of artillery in support of an operation. I mean, the sort of a tactics that one adopted, one followed, was that. And this was all going back to those training days that I mentioned in southeast England very much earlier. If you did a divisional attack, at any one moment you only had one battalion attacking. So all the artillery was supporting that one battalion. When the division was doing the attack, and that one battalion, it might be the one battalion of the whole corps. You may have the whole of the army artillery supporting it. We could have 1,000 guns supporting one battalion. And yet, I mean, there were times in military history when you were lucky to have 6 guns. We have 1,000. I mean, it was not unusual. And it was this sort of punching all the time. If there's a battalion go in and that one takes its objective, and even before it's finished, the other battalion's coming up, and that's got all the artillery to support it. And the artillery is then available for any counter-attack that comes in, so you could break up a counter-attack before it got to you. You just called the artillery down in considerable amount. And of course the Germans, I mean, they were pretty effective with their artillery, but by golly, we were better still. I mean, we had it
and
vast numbers.
And had so much more of it by the
time. Oh, so much more. Yeah, huge. I mean, the great 7.2s. The great shells like cart horses.
And how were those guns moved about?
Well, they
tow them behind lorries, or
they wouldn't have to be moved very much. I mean, they'd always be wherever they are within the range of your battle anyway. So, I mean, you're able to, you know, the gun areas are almost fixed for a bit. I mean, the only artillery that's probably a bit more mobile, it's all mobile, but the most mobile is your field artillery, which is directly supporting you. I mean, your field artillery officers, I mean, they were almost a part of the regiment. I mean, you knew them. But the point was that your field artillery officers actually coordinated all the artillery. You had your own battery commander. Every battalion had its own battery commander from the gunners. And he commanded all the artillery in support of you. Well, he commanded it in the sense that he instructed them what was needed.
Yeah.
And all these targets had code names. So you, a Mike target was a regiment of 36 guns, an Uncle target was a divisional artillery of 76 guns, and a Victor target was a corps artillery of several hundred guns, and I can't remember what an army target was, but I mean, whatever it was, you know, it was enormous. And that one battery commander was actually coordinating that fire.
Yeah.
And it's very highly coordinated system. And I mentioned the CO, and I'm with the CO, I'm also with the battery commander, because he was with the CO too. So the three of us. Yeah. And that's how it operated. So that's why the tactics that were developed were so effective.
So you pressed on with and behind, or perhaps even in front of time to time, the Highland Division?
No, never behind them then, because I mean we then all divisional France.
Fanned out.
Yes. And we were up on the north side, and we went up on the Oldenburg to Bremen to Hamburg route. That was our, I actually didn't get that far. I was wounded at Bremen, just outside Bremen. So I finished my war there.
And what happened there, Jack? At Bremen?
To me?
Yes.
We were held up at a road problem. We were coming under a bit of fire. And I was hit by a German 88.
Shell splinter.
Yeah, right through my right leg. Smashed my knee. Leg. And I was evacuated eventually.
What?
Straight away. I eventually came back to England, and I was in hospital in Birmingham.
Right.
And then rejoined the battalion in Berlin the following March.
So you were out for 11 months?
Yeah, I was in hospital for about 6 months.
Were you?
Mm. Not quite as long as that. I was in hospital for about 3 months, and then I was 3 months as a sort of close outpatient. And then I went to, I started by going to a unit down in Brighton called Resettlement Unit, Number 2 Resettlement Unit. I commanded a company in this unit, but it was mostly Japanese, ex-Japanese prisoners I had, who were being rehabilitated and that. And whilst I was there, I kept pressing for going to rejoin my battalion. And eventually the Commander-in-Chief of Eastern Command came and visited the unit. And at lunch, I met him, and he said, what was I doing, what did I want to do? And I said, I want to get back to the battalion. So he nodded to one of his staff, and he said, and within a couple of days, I was away.
Posting came through.
Yeah, yes, I rejoined my battalion as his adjutant in Berlin. Yeah. And meanwhile, I'd been given a mention in dispatches, so that was nice and things to have. And I rejoined the battalion. And I was the last officer of the battalion, because we were in Berlin for several months, well, 3 or 4 months. And the battalion went into suspended animation, as they call it, as the TA battalion. And we went back to Britain, but I never went. I moved the battalion out of Berlin to Lüneburg, where we were. And myself and the doctor and the quartermaster were the last three, and I signed the last bit of paper.
Just before we finish, just tell me, you got back to Berlin then in March of 46.
Yeah.
It has been very seriously destroyed.
Oh, absolutely. But the Russians were still with Russians.
The Russians were
all over the place.
All over the place. Was there any demarcation between East and Western lines?
Yes, I mean, there was the British sector and the French sector, which was technically a part of the British sector, because we gave it to the French, the Russians wouldn't give them anything. So we gave them a bit of our sector. And the American sector. We had a great time in Berlin. I mean, I'm very interested in music and things like this, so I fortunately spent a lot of time at the opera and the music and that, because I had access.
That was my next question, because the city is as damaged as any city really has been.
Yeah.
It's just gone through a terrible, well, not a terrible, but a very difficult winter with no fuel, I expect.
It was appalling.
Food difficult.
Yeah.
Rations difficult. And yet, opera and concerts seem to operate.
Well, we kept those going. I mean,
they were kept going by the British, were they?
Well, they were kept going by the Western Allies. I'm not sure what the Russians did. They would do a bit of propaganda stuff, but I mean, we financed it. We provided rations and that. It so happened. A general of the control commission who's responsible for culture and information and that was a Dorset officer, and because I was the adjutant of the Dorset battalion, I mean, he obviously was happy to talk to the battalion, and he wasn't particularly interested. Now, in the stats open, he had his own private box. He gave me that box, so I was going to the opera about six times a week.
In my own box.
Almost. It was his box, but I was using it. And my friends.
How very agreeable.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've attended rehearsals of the, as well as the poor performances of the Berlin Symphony. Berlin Symphony, isn't it?
Yes.
When Shelley Badarchy was the conductor, and I've met Shelley Badarchy on many occasions, and had him in my box with him. So I saw, you know, the discipline of the rehearsals and things of the orchestra.
That was
all in the British sector. We were very fortunate. You see, we had the Staatsoper, we had the Berlin Philharmonic.
What was the discipline of the people like? What was their humour, their state of mind?
Oh, they were in terrible state.
Were they?
I mean, they really suffered because of the Russian occupation, the way the Russians came in. I mean, I'm a Catholic, and I got very friendly. We got very friendly with some German nuns who had all been raped. All of them. And people were just wanting to get out of Berlin. And of course, subsequently, we came down into the British zone, we came to Celle, and where Kathleen joined me. I mean, we were in Germany for 10 years. I had three children born
in Germany.
Yeah, three children born in Germany. Yeah. I mean, the domestic servants we had were all refugees from the East, and had come, smuggled themselves down on the trains, hidden away.
And you had presumably changed from being, well, you had become a regular officer? Or had you always been a regular officer?
No, I changed, I became a regular officer in Celle. I was in 1946, yes, right then, the end of 46. Yeah.
And so regular officers were able to have their wives join?
Oh, anybody.
Oh, could they?
Oh, yeah, I had nothing to do with regulars. I mean, if anybody could have it. And soldiers had their wives as well.
Could they?
Oh, yeah. Catherine was one of the first families to go to Germany.
Right.
We used to have guards outside the palace, Yugoslav people, you know, bandits, you know. Frightening off the housekeeper, prodding them, and that. But we were there all the whole time. But I transferred actually in 1948 to the intelligence corps. So I spent 27 years with the intelligence corps.
Right.
That's where I really served. That's my main corps now, or until I retired.
Well, that is a subject for a future.
Yes, it could well be. I mean, it was all over the world, that was.
For a future discussion, yeah, I think, possibly. Yeah, yeah. I think that, Jack, if there's nothing else further that you'd like to say, I don't know whether...
No, I think that's enough for the moment.
You've said enough for the moment, yeah. Have you? Well, can I just say, Jack, thank you very much indeed for giving up so much today and for contributing to the sound archive of the Imperial War Museum. Thank you very much indeed.